Okay, hi everyone. My name is Matt Reska. The topics are a sticky issue, but I'll try to tell you about some recent efforts at Environment Canada where we've tried to introduce two new global dynamical constraints which should at least improve things in the exotropics, and once we get that in a satisfactory state, we'll worry about the tropics, I guess. This is work with Sroja Polyvaripu at Environment Canada, and on some aspects of this work, we're collaborating with Luc Fillion, who's also at EC in Dorval. Brief outline. So I'll start by motivating the problem. I'll introduce the balances that we're talking about, Charny's balance we've just seen, and its close cousin, the linear balance. The divergence can be constrained using the quasi-dystrophic omega equation, and I'll briefly introduce both of these. I'll talk about the implementation in 3DVAR, and I'll show you some online 3DVAR tests. We'll compare various increments using these methods. We'll look at some scores, and finally we'll finish off with a brief word about the efficiency of these different methods. Okay, this is definitely a work in progress, I should say, so I'm certainly not ready to say that these constraints are ready to be implemented operationally or anything like that, but hopefully I'll convince you that at least we're on the right track. So for motivation, I'll show these pictures from our technical note by Mike Fisher. What he's showing here are the temperature and wind increments at 228 hectopascals for a single observation at 300 hectopascals. In the bottom two panels, he's used the traditional mass wind balance, which is based on statistics. This goes all the way back to Derber and Boutte, 1999, I guess, and has been used fairly successfully at a number of centers for years. And you can see that both of these increments are fairly symmetric, even though there's this very highly curved background flow. In the upper two panels, he's implemented the Charny balance and the QG omega constraint, and you can see that both of these increments are asymmetric, and they seem to follow this highly curved background wind. Okay, so this is a dependence on the background winds that we would like to introduce. Another motivation is the idea of spurious mixing. This picture is from Schobel et al. Of JGR 2003. What they did was to look at 50J trajectory calculations using two different assimilation schemes and also a free model. And without getting into the details here, depending on which, no matter which method they used to calculate the vertical velocity, essentially they saw a lot of dispersion of the tracer after 50 days in the assimilation schemes, and hardly any dispersion of the tracer with the free model run. Now, of course, since then people have said, okay, maybe these pictures have to be taken with a grain of salt, and you have to be careful how you interpret them. But nevertheless, I think the general statement can be made that by inserting observations, you're going to introduce spurious gravity waves, which are going to affect things like your age of air and mixing of species, etc. So if we can control the vertical velocity in some sense, then again, that would be beneficial. This 3DVAR cost function, of course, we know and love. The balances, at least in our system, are introduced by transforming the state vector X, which is composed of these fields, into a balanced plus an unbalanced component, and henceforth the minimization is only done on the unbalanced components. And the balances which sit inside this transformation matrix are sort of the heart of what I'm talking about. So for example, a balanced velocity potential, and Heiner has already shown this graphically just a few minutes ago, the balanced velocity potential will be obtained from this matrix E and the given stream function. Similarly, a balanced temperature can be obtained via this matrix G, again from the stream function. So G essentially is your mass wind balance, and E you can think of as the divergence balance. Okay. In our formulation operationally, G is a time average statistical operator. Okay, so you simply compute the correlations between these two fields over a month, and if you're careful about how you implement it, then essentially that determines your covariance between the two fields. In our formulation, the divergence is essentially constrained only by this Ekman balance, which holds in the lowest few levels of the model. So it arises from the friction of the flow with the surface of the Earth. So So in the free atmosphere, essentially, there is no balance constraint applied there. So what I've been trying to do is essentially replace one or both of these balances with the following. We have Chinese balance, okay, which gives us a balanced G potential from the stream function, and via hydrostatic balance, you can get a balanced temperature. As well, there's the QG omega equation, okay, which is a diagnostic equation for the vertical velocity omega, and through the continuity equation, or the incompressibility condition, if you like, you can get a balanced velocity potential. Okay, and it is hoped that if you now introduce these truncated or filtered equations into your system as constraints, then you'll constrain your evolution to some sort of slow quasi-manifold, right, and try to filter out those pesky gravity waves. Sorry to the people who have studied gravity waves. Well, if we knew which ones were spurious and which ones weren't, I suppose, you know, we wouldn't have a problem. Just a quick word, where these equations come from, for those of you that maybe don't deal with this sort of stuff on a daily basis. If you take the divergence equation and neglect terms that are small, quote-unquote, you obtain Chinese balance, and if you further neglect this nonlinear term, then you just get linear balance, okay? The QG omega equation can be derived from the quasi-geostrophic vorticity and thermodynamic equations. You assume leading order geostrophy and the hydrostatic relation and play around with the equations until you get this diagnostic equation for the vertical velocity in terms of the stream function and the temperature. Okay, a few more words because there are a lot of details hiding in here. So I'm assuming a straightforward extension to the sphere. Okay, it's not a terribly rigorous derivation on the sphere. QG model doesn't even hold on the sphere in its traditional form. But nevertheless, you know, we're hoping that even an approximate balance is, you know, may still provide useful information. Then, of course, you formulate tangent linear equations, so the 3 bar cost function that I showed on the previous slide actually should have been written in terms of the increments rather than the full fields. So, for example, Chinese balance can be written like this, and it is the interaction of the background winds UR and VR with the increment stream function delta psi, which should hopefully give you the interaction and the dependence on the background flow. Okay, a couple more details. Everything's done on this eta coordinate, which introduces some transformations both in the vertical gradients and in the horizontal gradients, but you have to cut corners somewhere, otherwise the equations just get too unwieldy. So through various offline tests, I've convinced myself that if you neglect, or if you assume a very simple linear relation between the pressure and this hybrid coordinate eta, on the left-hand sides of these equations and wherever you have Laplacians, but you do a rigorous correction for the eta coordinate everywhere else, then that seems to give reasonable solutions. Finally, there are some other assumptions in here, like a constant static stability parameter. Okay, this is probably a big assumption, but it certainly makes the equation easier to solve, so you have to start somewhere. So that's an assumption that we made. And finally, you have to formulate and test the adjoint model and test it until you're blue in the face or possibly longer. The computational setup, which some of you may actually be interested in, the GCM that we're using is GEMSTRATO version 3.2.2 with a lid at 0.1 hectopascals. And you've already seen this model earlier today, so I won't say much more about it. The assimilation is essentially the same as the operational 3DVAR version 10 used at the Canadian Meteorological Center, and I note here that only the meteorology is assimilated. Okay, so yes, there's chemistry that the model is doing, but I don't use the chemistry for assimilation or anything like that. Also, I meant to point out that really what I'm playing with here are the balances between the mass and the wind fields and between the stream function and the velocity potential, but I haven't touched the correlations and the variances within each field. Okay, so those are still essentially what they are operationally. And so it's not entirely consistent, but again, it was a first step. So I'll show you some experiments. These were done over a two-week period, actually over a month period, which some of which just finished last Sunday. But after 2 weeks, the results really hadn't changed, so I just kept my old figures. And all of these were run in September of 2003. Why September? Well, why not? So there's a control run, okay, which uses essentially the statistical mass wind balance, okay, and it would be useful if you kept in mind these little acronyms, SD, EK, etc., which you will see on the next few slides. So it uses the traditional statistical mass wind balance and the Ekman surface balance, okay, and then we have three experiments where I test these new constraints. So we have Chinese balance in experiment one, but I've kept the Ekman surface balance. In experiment two, I go back to the statistical mass wind balance, but I introduced QG omega balance. And finally, in experiment three, I've got both linear balance and QG omega balance. Okay, I know you're wondering why linear balance and not Chinese balance. For the purposes of this talk, they were very close, almost no difference. So just pretend this is Chinese balance, and you won't miss much. Okay, so finally we see some results here. What I'm showing here are just snapshots. Okay, these are increments of the temperature in the upper two panels at 500 hectopascals, and in the lower two panels, just vertical cross sections at the prime meridian. Okay, just randomly chosen. And on the left, we've got essentially the control run, which uses the statistical balance for the mass wind relation. And on the right, we're using Chinese balance, so this is experiment one. Okay? So if you compare these two increments on the left and right, I'd say at 500 hectopascals, the comparison is actually quite good. Okay? I was actually quite pleased with how close these are. You can pick out all these little features and find the corresponding ones in the other plot. So in that sense, I thought the results were quite encouraging. But of course, then I looked at the vertical structure, and well, again, there are clear similarities. But one thing that's not so great is this these very flat horizontal features which show up. And I must say, this is already after I played around with the equation and massaged it by eliminating the zonal mean on the right-hand side at one particular stage. So I'm trying to minimize this, but there's something here that's going on that's messing up the vertical structure, and I'm not sure what it is. So this is something I have to address. Yes?
The linear, the balance gives you the G potential. From that, you have to compute temperature and pressure.
Right.
A small change in pressure gives you this 2 delta. You get these oscillations in the vertical.
Okay. That could well be it. It's not something simple like just an inaccuracy in the discretization scheme itself. I've tried two different ones, and they gave essentially the same results. So yeah, it could be something that I'm doing wrong with the pressure.
From n values, you got to determine mm-hmm. n plus 1 values.
Right. Okay.
And you have to close that system.
Okay. Okay. So we definitely want to talk to you afterwards. Great. So. Yeah, so a bit of a mixed result for the vertical cross sections, but again, I didn't think these were too bad, again for a start. Now I'm showing you here the velocity potential, and this is off by a factor of 10 to the 6, of course, just to make the numbers reasonable. So again, we're looking at the control on the left, and now we're looking at experiment 2, I guess, on the right. And again, if you look at cross-sections at 500 hectopascals, I would say the agreement is quite good. And I should definitely mention that certainly I'm not trying to reproduce the control, okay? On the one hand, I'd like my fields to be similar, because we know that the traditional balances have been used operationally for years, and they're doing quite well. So I don't want a huge departure. On the other hand, if there are some differences, that could, in principle, be a good thing. So that's why I'm comparing these. So again, I think the comparison here is reasonable, but once again, if you look at the vertical structure, below 10 hectopascals, I'd say they compare quite well, and then above 10 hectopascals, something not so good happens, and again, I somehow doubt that this is real. Okay, again, it's something wonky going on with my solution scheme, it could be that assumption of a static stability parameter. Okay, that's. I mean, if you assume that the static stability is the same in the troposphere, in the stratosphere, in the mesosphere, you know, that's probably a bit too much. Also, I'm showing the part of the mesosphere here, but there may not be any balance in the mesosphere. So I mean, anything that we get, you know, above the stratosphere would be a gift. If there's no balance there, well, that, you know, so be it. Maybe we just have to taper it to zero because of, you know, the gravity wave breaking and such. Okay, so what are some sort of statistical ways to compare these different experiments? And again, keeping in mind that, you know, we're in the early stages of this. What I'm showing here are scores over the two-week period, and most of the difference shows up in the temperature field, so I'll just limit myself in this talk to showing you the scores for the temperature. On the left, we're going to have the standard deviation. On the right, the bias. Okay. And let's just look at the dashed lines first of all in both pictures. The dashed lines are the O minus A, or observation minus analysis, scores. And the blue dashed line is the control, and the red is experiment one. Okay. And of course, we'd like to be close to zero. So in this case, you can see that the blue is slightly larger than the red, so the experiment seems to be doing a little bit better than the standard control run pretty much everywhere in the atmosphere, at least up to 10 hectopascals. Okay? In the bias, well, they're quite close, and I don't know. So we're looking at the dashed line. So again, maybe if there is a difference there, maybe the experiment does slightly better than the control, but there isn't much of a difference. Now let's switch to the continuous lines. Again, blue is the control. Continuous red is the experiment. And now we're going to look at O minus P, or observation minus prediction. Okay. In this case, again, they're quite close throughout the atmosphere, but in the upper troposphere, lower stratosphere, the experiment actually does slightly worse in the standard deviation, and well, probably slightly worse in the bias as well. Okay. So. That's pretty much what a Chinese balance gives you. Okay, so that was the experiment with Chinese balance. If you now look at experiment two, which, as you recall, was using the quasi-geostrophic omega equation, again, standard deviation on the left, bias on the right. Well, all the curves are quite similar, so I won't go through them one by one. Essentially, the only difference here is in the lowermost troposphere, where essentially the experiment is doing slightly worse than the control. Okay, so I'm certainly not telling you that, okay, we've got these balances working to the point where they're actually doing better than the control, but at least I was happy to see that, you know, we're not out in left field, and you know, I think with some improvements and fixing some of the inconsistencies, you know, hopefully we could improve on this. Okay, and finally we'll look at experiment three. We got time. Has the clock stopped? Okay, no, I'm kidding. It took 27 minutes when I was practicing, so I don't know. All right. So finally, in experiment three, we've replaced both the balances with in this case, linear balance and the quasi-geostrophic omega constraint. And essentially, the effect on the scores is exactly what you would expect based on the previous two slides. So again, I won't go through it in detail, but it pretty much verifies what you saw on the last two slides. Okay, so the first question that I wanted to ask was, well, okay, so maybe we're getting increments that aren't too different from the control, but maybe it's just a minimization scheme working overtime, you know, nudging the analysis back towards something reasonable, but maybe the balance constraints themselves really aren't doing very much, you know, nothing useful. So I looked at the efficiency of the minimization with these experiments, and essentially that's summarized in this table right here. So if we look at the number of iterations, okay, for the control we've got 101, and then for the experiments, well, again, I was happy to see that we haven't gone up, we've actually gone down by a bit. So the number of iterations is the number of times that the minimization procedure is called. Okay, the number of simulations is slightly higher for the control, and it's slightly higher for the experiment. So again, nothing too surprising has gone on there. The number of simulations is the number of times which you evaluate the cost function, and you might have to do that more than once per iteration because you have to determine the direction of your descent as well as the distance along that direction. And if your minimization scheme is working reasonably efficiently, then the number of simulations is going to be just slightly higher than the number of iterations. So again, I was happy to see that that's true in all of these. So just to say that nothing strange has gone on there. And of course, the final proof in the pudding is how long does all this take? So for the control, just the analysis step part of the whole simulation process takes about 15 minutes, whereas my experiments take quite a bit longer. Okay, so for Chinese balance, I've got half an hour, and for the other two, which use the quasi-dystrophic omega equation, or both QZ omega and linear balance, it's something like an hour. Okay, so yes, that takes quite a bit longer. There are quite a few terms in the equation that you have to go through, but I should just end off by saying that I haven't tried to minimize the code in any way. Okay, so at this point, I'm just trying to make sure that it's computing things more or less correctly, and hopefully once I'm happy with the solutions, then I can go back and try to make things more efficient. Okay? So that's essentially all I have to say. So the ongoing work is as follows. I'd love to show you some pictures like that picture by Mike Fisher, where there's a real physical impact of the new constraint on the increment. And so I spent the weekend essentially looking through the analyses and trying to see if I could see that flow dependence between the control and experiment one, essentially. And, well, sure, I saw examples where the increments seemed to follow sort of the curved background flow, but I could also see examples where that doesn't happen. So there's nothing there that I could, you know, that I could really point to convincingly. So I think the right thing to do is what Mike Fisher did and do a one-object experiment, right? And then you can really see the geometry, the difference in geometry that's imposed by your constraint. So we like to improve scores, and really what I mean by that is fix all the things that we're still, you know, all the issues that need to be addressed, relax the assumption of a static stability, and probably improve the implementation of Chinese balance, etc. Now, a little further down the line, we were planning on introducing diabatic heating effects into the QG omega equation, okay? And this has already been done successfully in a regional context, so we were hoping that by doing that in this global formulation, we could improve things in the tropics to some extent. And of course, you could introduce other similar balances besides Chinese balance in the tropics and see whether you could make some progress that way. Again, once I've got all the machinery working, et cetera. Also, just a note that I've replaced this Ekman balance, which holds at the surface, with a QG omega balance. But really, Ekman balance is probably a fine balance to have at the surface, and then you want maybe QG omega in the free atmosphere. So really, I'd like to combine these two and have both of them operative. And finally, I'd like to improve the efficiency, because if I don't, then I don't think people are going to want to implement it operationally. So I'll end there. Finally, I'll just make a note that there are all these people that I have to thank who helped me out as part of this work, and they're all here alphabetically. So I'll stop there, and thanks very much for your attention.